Today's special guest is a repeat guest for us. It's Congressman-elect Greg Landsman. He's joining us today to talk about how things are going with the kind of transition from Cincinnati City Council to everything he has to do to represent the 1st District of Ohio.
That'll be a good conversation with Greg. I know he's pretty busy now. I can't wait to hear what's been happening since he found out that he won the election.
Agreed. There's a lot of questions there.
But he created a hole, Sherry.
He did.
And this is right smack dab in the middle of your beat. Who is going to replace Greg Landsman on City Council? We talked about it a little bit. Do you have any updates?
Let's talk about the process.
All right.
And then I'll give you my guess again at
the end.
Stepping out on the ledge with the risk of saying who I think is going to be. And I honestly don't know. But the process to me has been super interesting this time. It had been a group of council members who were going to pick who replaced Greg. The charter says when a council person comes in, they pick, you know, who gets to choose their replacement should they not be able to finish their term for any reason. Turns out one of those reasons if you become a congressman. So it
Which is better than what's been happening in the past when you get indicted. But that's another story.
True.
We won't go there now.
So,
it's kind of a unique process because if you're an outgoing member of council and you're not indicted, and you're going to Congress, as is the case, you designate another member of council to manage the process of replacing you.
Greg had chosen like the other Democrats on council, but that proved that was a kind of a bear with like a big group. Is it public records, open meetings? They're like, you know, Greg was like, you know what? Reggie Harris is going to handle this process. Now, as we've seen in the past, Reggie could have easily said, I'm going to pick the person and then I'll tell you who it is. And I wouldn't even have complained because that's the process. And you never hear me say, oh, well, you know, I don't care about transparency. Like, I want everything. But that's the process. But Reggie has really created a process that I would love to see going forward. He took applications. 47 people responded. Of those, like, they weren't all really completed. It's been a quick process, too. Like, the people had to, you know, kind of jump into action if they wanted this. But that's partly by design. He wants people who already have been thinking about being a council person. One of the questions was, you know, what have you done, but also what would you do? You had to have thought about it before you got to this moment of application. So he narrowed it to 12, and then he did say, and he interviewed everyone to start, narrows it to 12, interviewed those 12. That's where we are in the process. He's announcing it the week of the 12th, next week.
It's coming quick. It's coming quick. So we'll know. We'll know the answer.
We will. I think we're going to get to it before the police chief selection. It's a big month at City Hall. But I think he's waiting for Mayor Puroval to be part of all of, you know, the hoopla. This is going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance next week, I think, of choosing a new member.
And let's talk about Mayor Aftab for a second.
He does like to be called Mayor Aftab.
Right.
I'm having trouble with it. Like, it's just...
It does.
I'm like mayor or
right,
Mayor Puroval.
Right, yes. Because we never would say Mayor John. It was always Mayor Cranley. But yes, Mayor Aftab. And you know, that's part of his brand.
100%.
Right, but
which he knew before I realized that.
But I guess working around his schedule is a little difficult lately because, you know, he's off to India.
He is in India. I think he's actually back today. But he had the opportunity to meet the Dalai Lama with some other mayors in the country. And so he's been gone for a week doing that. And while he's not part of the process to select, he'll be part of like the unveiling and the announcements, which is definitely pure Reggie's decision and everything. This whole shortlist, interviewing the shortlist has happened while the mayor has been gone. So they say the mayor's not part of it, but no reason to doubt that. He's in India.
And that was noteworthy. I mean, as everyone should know, he is the first mayor of Asian descent that we have elected.
Pacific Asian.
Right. And he has, you know, in his lineage, ties to Tibet. So this, I'm sure, for Aftab was a special moment. He's been to Washington. He's met with the president, but
he's been to Washington several times.
It's a short list of people who get to go spend time with the Dalai Lama. So maybe he will come back very centered.
I feel like he already is.
You think
so? City Hall is such a calmer place. And, you know, they still have, when they say that they're all getting along, I mean, that's kind of like a big broad term for things, but it's definitely calmer. Like, I feel it when I walk in the building, it's a happier place. It just is.
And you mentioned Reggie Harris being very open with the list of candidates. We shouldn't say candidates, but the people that they are considering.
Something you've never seen before. Not only did he give us the list, he said why he selected the person. And I had a lot of people say, I can't believe he did that. But I want, like, it was his idea. I literally, when he suggested that, I was like, we don't really do that, but I'm happy to do it. Like, it just, that was my knee-jerk reaction of, like, it was that transparent. And he and I sat for a while and went over why he selected the people. And it was really enlightening for me to see people in a different light, even than I was looking at their resumes. And to, like, his thoughts aloud, it was really super transparent.
That's right. Well, I mean, the whole reason that we have this process we're going through now is because Greg Landsman is bound for Washington, and he is our guest. So should we jump right to it?
First, I'm going to tell you who I think is going to get the job. I still think Evan Nolan is, that's got to be on the record, Burl.
Okay. And you know, I pressed you for this at the last podcast, and you threw a few names out there.
But
now you're settling, you're going to narrow it down to one.
I am. I really do think it's going to be Evan Nolan. And not, there's been some speculation. He was the treasurer for the mayor. And that's not why I think. Because Evan has housing expertise, at least with City Hall, throughout this whole year. And a huge issue, I promise there's no bigger issue than the railroad next year. But a huge issue next year, like kind of out of the gate, I think we're going to start hearing about the density ordinance again. I promise it's interesting, even if that didn't sound like it. And that takes a lot of housing expertise. And I think there's a lot of, you know, it failed the first time this current year, and it's going to come back. And
that would indicate to me that despite his global travel, that Mayor Aftab is that he has he's exerted possibly some influence here.
I feel like now we really get into the nitty gritty, but let's do it because that's part of the charm of the podcast. Because
right.
You can understand, like,
buckle
my process
up for a minute. Here I was all ready to jump to the guest segment, but okay, we're gonna, as we can do, because it's our podcast, we're gonna linger on this moment for a second. So buckle in, listeners, we're gonna go deep.
Evan came over to City Hall. Worked for the law, he's a lawyer, Georgetown Law, worked for Katz Teller, comes over to City Hall, works for the law department, special projects for the mayor, kind of, but like special projects, like the big things. And part of his job Reggie's in charge of the housing committee. And part of Evan's job was to advise that committee. Each committee has a lawyer assigned to it. And then you become an expert in the issues before that. It's a good way to do things. And Evan was that person. So he's really gotten to know Reggie. Like, that's a serious person, especially as you're learning.
No, that
right?
makes
Reggie's
sense.
Brand new.
That makes sense.
And he's getting to, you know, what are his questions? He's worked very closely with Evan.
How do you think that will play, having someone who has been in the administration come into the, you know, cross the line into being a public servant that's part of the electeds?
I'll be interested to watch. And I'll assume he knows that there's no texting about city business.
Yeah, right. If anyone should, yeah. Okay. All right.
Okay. So, but that's just my guess. We'll see.
Okay. Well, we will
see. I think we'll hear before the next time we record this podcast.
All right. Well, we can put them on the short list, whoever they are, to be a guest.
Yes. Oh, of course. Of course. Of course.
All right.
You know what? I will say we haven't had every council member on. I think there was, you know, a learning curve, and there was not like the busiest session, like the first 6 months as everyone kind of got off the ground. I am planning to fold them in as big issues come before them. That I like these guests to be very newsy and not just like they're a council person. Well, this person is like super in the spotlight. They're not one of nine. They're like the one.
Right. And even though you, as you said, it's pretty calm there, other than the, you know, the proposed sale of the railroad, there hasn't been any like earth shattering announcements or news, but something's bound to happen. I mean, this is Cincinnati City Council. They're, you know, we can't go the whole year, the whole 2023 without some fireworks happening. I mean, right? It is still Cincinnati.
Let's differentiate big news from fireworks, because it's a pretty calm bunch. And they do, at least they're civil. Getting along with each other and civil are two different things. They're very civil with each other.
Right.
And so I'm never in the year ahead would I say there's going to be huge fireworks over something in public.
Right.
Do I think there's going to be big news? I do.
All right.
Okay. Let's bring in Greg Landsman. Welcome, Greg.
So here's the question I have. What happens on day one after you get elected? Because I have this picture in my mind of you being whisked away into a secure area and debriefed on issues of national security and all those things. But what really happens? Is it that dramatic, or is it just like another day?
I mean, in some ways, it's pretty dramatic and quick. You know, they want you in D.C. As quickly as possible. I mean, the goal is to get everybody ready to go so that they can get to work on day one. So, meaning, within a couple of days, I was on a flight to D.C. There is a ton of training from, you know, how you set up an office and hiring a staff, because the staff is huge. You know, they're the ones that are going to interact with constituents and make sure that their casework is moving forward. They're the ones that are going to be working on legislation and making sure people have somebody who's there, getting bills passed and the length. You know, obviously the member is very involved, but staff is critical. You got to get good staff. You also have to understand the rules, the ethics rules, the rules of the House, and how committees work and how to get on a committee. That's huge. So, you know, there were people whose races hadn't been called that were in D.C. A couple of races had both the candidates, the Republican and the Democrat, there in D.C., because they want to wait. They don't want to wait to get people up to speed. Some of those folks had to go home, in the middle of the training because the race was called. But that's how quickly and serious everyone is.
Can you imagine that moment of heartbreak when you're so close? And you're there and you're going through the orientation.
Wait, did somebody open the door with a crook of their finger and be like, come here, and then they never came back?
I'm trying to remember it's heartbreaking. And you got to give them credit for coming in the first place. I suspect in other, there were races where they didn't come because they wanted just to hold back until they knew. And so there's a lot of courage and showing up and saying, okay, I may be in front of all of these folks and find out it didn't go our way. What happens is you're all getting alerts on House races. And so, you know, you see your phone that this race in California got called or that race in Colorado. And then the person who didn't win, you don't see the next day. They get on a flight and they go home. It speaks to just how quickly they expect incoming members to get up to speed so that they are ready to go and get to work on January 3rd.
Have you said what committees you want to be on?
Yeah, so I have thought, as you would imagine, you know, it's about, okay, what would make the most sense for this district, for Cincinnati, Southwest Ohio, Warren County, and you know, small business. That my predecessor was on small business. I think that's really important, you know, to lean into and support our small businesses, be that reliable federal partner, and to do so for those small businesses that have been on the margins, that haven't always gotten the help. Education and labor, you know, my passion has always been what's best for children and families. And it was all about in the campaign, how do we make things better for families? And so I want to be there working on those issues, including wages and everything that's happening with workers. But then transportation and infrastructure, we got a bridge to build and a whole host of infrastructure projects to get done.
Do you get to pick, or are you asked to? What is the process? Do you ask to be on it? And
yeah,
then you're
the process is you put a letter together, laying out the, you know, your interests, your arguments for wanting to be on these committees. You put a marker down for the committee that there are these quote unquote exclusive committees, like Ways and Means, Appropriations, Oversight, and you say, you know, ultimately I want to be on, and for me it was appropriations. I want to be on, you know, I'm the chair of the budget and finance. I the budget is, you know, a reflection of our priorities and where we're trying to have the most impact. And so, you know, ultimately I'd like to be on appropriations. So you put that marker down in your letter, and then you lay out the committees that you're looking to do. You send it to key folks in leadership, and you get feedback, and then you submit it. And you know, ultimately it's the folks that you just elected as leaders who will decide. And you know, a part of it is just making sure each committee has a broad representation of the caucus of the country. And you know, so you're, you know, I have a better shot at those committees where there aren't a lot of Midwesterners. You know what I mean?
Also, we are building a bridge. That was a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, we're building a bridge. Not, you'd be surprised, you know, small business and ed and labor and transportation and infrastructure, those aren't the like most popular committees. Those are the, you know, those are the committees that, you know, do a lot of really important work. But they're not the most coveted. So I don't know what will happen. I'm going to make obviously the strongest case possible. But those are committees that I should be able to get on.
So I heard a rumor, and I did say it was earlier on the podcast that I wanted to confirm it. Did you actually have a meeting with Steve Chabot as part of this transition time?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So
what was that like? How did it come to be?
So on election night, you know, he called to concede and to congratulate me on, you know, a well-run race. And, you know, I think that was incredibly generous. It's also, you know, I would have done it. It's part of, you know, the way these elections are supposed to work. And so I was incredibly appreciative and immediately, you know, said, you know, we should get coffee. And he said, I would like that. And so, you know, yeah. So I sent him a note and said, you know, are you still up for coffee? And he said, yeah, of course. And so we did, we got together, we talked a lot about, you know, I tried to get as much advice as possible from him. Who are the Republicans that, you know, I should seek out and work with? You know, I want to be, you know, continue to be, you know, a bipartisan person who's just building coalitions to make things happen for folks who need us to get work done. So that was a big, you know, that is a big priority for me in this transition, is sorting out, okay, who are the folks that I've got to go and build relationships with to help folks back here. And, you know, I asked him about the committee process and advice there. Constituent services is going to be a huge, huge priority for us. You know, we want to be a go-to office. And so that was also part of why it was important for us to connect, because all of these folks have, there are a lot of people who have active casework with Congressman Chabot and his team. I don't want to let any of those folks down. And that means in part that Congressman Chabot and I are good, and that we have our staffs working together, which they are, to you ping each person, because they have to say, yes, please pass along my casework. But you want that process to start as soon as possible so that nobody loses any ground in terms of their Social Security check or whatever Medicare issue they're having. Veterans, healthcare related issue. There's a whole host of things. So, that to me was hugely important. And he was, you know, more than agreeable. He had already talked to his team about this being a smooth transition where all of that gets shared and that we're working together to make sure nobody, you know, loses any momentum on their case.
All right. So I have about 22 follow-up questions with everything you just said there. That was packed with information there. So the easy one, many people forget about the constituent service piece of this until they need something. Can you give me a feel for like how many cases and how big is your staff going to be?
So the staff ranges, I think, you know, some people have smaller staffs, 12, 13, 14 people. Some people have, I think the max is 18. And so that's it's a big staff. So you have a legislative team in D.C. and that's, you know, around three people who are just doing legislation. And so if you think about our region, there's going to be a lot of folks who want, you know, specific language in a bill, or they would like this change project supported. And so we want to be a go-to place where our team is just set up, ready to go and making things happen. And that's a group of around three. You have a chief of staff, somebody who runs the whole thing, communications folks. And then in DC, you've got, you know, sort of split the staff in two. So you got half in DC, half in the district. You've got a lot of caseworkers, three or four caseworkers. And then folks who are doing outreach and helping, in my mind, doing, you know, big policy work. So, you know, there's a team working on the bridge, like a regional team working on the bridge. We want to be part of that team. I want somebody there. I want to be there a lot, but I want someone there who's helping them move this project forward as quickly and as thoughtfully as possible, so that it gets done on time or sooner. And, you know, and it's paid for. And, you know, there's a group, as you both know, that's working on housing. They need a federal partner at the table. And so having a staff person, and maybe it's the same person, they are at the table actively helping move things forward. So it's not an insignificant group. I do think what matters most is how well they're performing and how engaged they are with our partners. I mean, I've talked about this for months. We need a federal partner on all of these big, big things, and this staff will collectively be that federal partner. It's not just me. It's this whole crew that is there in service just to folks here, folks at City Hall and the business community, folks in, you know, in labor, you know, everyone. And we'll try to get folks organized so that it's, you know, it's easier to interact with this office and get as much done as possible.
Wait, have you picked a chief of staff yet?
Yeah, so Leslie Grubb will be my chief. Although I will wait to do some of the other announcements. I think I'm going to do it the week after next. So I'll announce chief of staff, district director. I will I will say Barb Bell will be my district director. So those two, I'll tell you all that.
So you're stealing Barb away from me at City Hall. Fine, whatever.
She is,
well,
she's
I love
our chief Barb. Of staff. She's our, she still works. So she's been working for me. So she's just going to continue. But that was hard because I think for Barb too. I mean, leaving City Hall is going to be very hard for Barb and me. You know, the first couple of years were pretty tough. But the last year has been pretty great. And this council, the mayor, the staff, the administration, there's a healthier culture. People are working really well together. And, you know, Barb's been a big part of that. I've been a big part of that. I've also gotten to work with all of these, you know, amazing people who've been a big part of it. And, you know, not being there is going to be tough. I mean, I will miss it. But I tried to say to somebody yesterday, look, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just voting in a different building. You know what I mean? We've had so many members of Congress that just leave. I'm not leaving. I'm just voting in a different building. And hopefully I can make that a reality.
So you touched earlier on the need to build relationships on both sides of the aisle. Can you talk a little bit about coming in, joining what is now going to be the minority party? Huge transition with Nancy Pelosi not in the leadership position.
Who Greg used to work for.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know Hakeem Jeffries? Have you met him yet? And and how do you think that, you know, for a new member of Congress coming into you know, the post midterm shift in power a little bit, what is that going to be like?
So I'm not entirely sure. I mean, you know, part of it is, look, some things don't change, whether you're in the minority or majority. Do great constituent service work, make sure that people know that you're the place to go to get help. You leverage your role. Like there, somebody said, there's power in the letterhead, right? In the, you know, you're a member of Congress, use that to get things done with the administration. And, you know, whether it's the Department of Transportation or it's labor or, you know, whatever it is, the White House itself, and people back here need real action on a waiver or a project getting supported, you know, use that, the power of the letterhead in your role. And so I think you do that, you know, whether you're in the minority or majority. In terms of being in the minority, it obviously means find the working group that's going to get the work done. And I'm starting to figure that out. I mean, who are the folks on the Democratic side and the Republican side who are just going to go do the work, who aren't going to be, you know, obsessed with these investigations or obsessed with attacking the investigations, right? Like that's gonna be a thing. But quietly somewhere else, there's gonna be a group of people just doing the work. That's my crew. And finding that crew is really important. I do know Hakeem Jeffries. He's a congressman from Brooklyn. He's now the leader. If the Democrats take back the House, he'll be the speaker, first black leader. So it's historic. He'd be the first black speaker. He is a phenomenal person. He came to the district just a couple weeks, I think the week before the election. He has been in my corner and believed in this and believed in me from the beginning. So I have a really good relationship with the leader. He's incredibly smart, strategic, caring, and he's a good guy. He's a good person, and you both know me. I like good people. Catherine Clark, who's now the whip, also was there day one. So I have a really good relationship with her. She also happens to care about her big issues are my big issues. It's all about children and families with Whip Clark and Pete Aguilar. These are all folks who were heavily involved in our race. And so that helps because I can go to them. You know, they pick up the call. They, you know, they immediately respond to a text. You know, we like to think together. And so I think that will be very helpful to the district.
So one of the first things that you will vote on will be the Speaker of the House. Do you have a sense yet for how the caucus is going to handle the nomination of Kevin McCarthy?
No more than I think anyone else. You know, I get the sense that it's going to be close. He's got to get to 218. I don't think he's at 218. He's got 218 people in his caucus, but I don't know if he has the votes yet. Last I heard he didn't. You know, next in line is Steve Scalise. You know, could Scalise get the 218? I don't know. So I think January 3rd is going to be a very interesting and important day. But even if Kevin McCarthy gets 218 on January 3rd, obviously I'm not voting for Kevin McCarthy. We all get to vote. And I'm not voting for him. I'm not sure how long he's able to hold on to it. And I say that because that caucus, and this is what's at the heart of our race. And I think that what happened in Georgia last night and what's going to happen for election cycles to come until we're done with it. There is so much chaos and extremism in that caucus. And voters are done with it. They are tired of it. They want calm, steady, measured leadership where people are just getting work done because their lives are complicated and they have serious concerns that need to be addressed.
To be clear, yeah. It's Kevin that you object to. You would vote for a Republican, right? It's not like you're not going to cast a vote.
I'm not sure, you know, if there's somebody in the Republican caucus I'd vote for at the moment. I mean, I think the Republican caucus, and this is, you know, I'm a bipartisan guy. I have, as you all know, I like to build and have a record of building coalitions that not just have Republicans and independents in it, but they're at the leadership table. They're at the helm. This Republican caucus in D.C., right, and you're seeing it in Columbus, too, has serious issues that have to be addressed, where they have not done enough to root out this chaos and this extremism. Trump says just days ago, hey, let's get rid of the Constitution, put me back in charge of the country, reinstate me as president. He's having dinner with, Holocaust deniers presidential election dinners. It wasn't just a random dinner. This was a dinner about his 2024 race or Kanye's. It's just chaos. And until this caucus roots it out, gets rid of it, because it's such an enormous threat to our democracy and to our ability to, you know, get stronger as a country, I can't go there. Now, will I work with them? I'm seeking them out. I'm trying to find those folks that I can work with. I will tell you, there is a line for me, and that is, if you voted to try to overturn an election and you haven't said, hey, that was a mistake, or if you were at the Capitol and you haven't said, and you were part of, you know, an insurrection, and you haven't said, hey, that was a mistake, I don't think that we can normalize that behavior by saying, yeah, let's sign on to a bill together. I think those folks have to be marginalized and ultimately pushed out, or they have to say, hey, that was a mistake, because we cannot mess with this as a country. It's too dangerous.
I did, you know, that is one of the things. There's a lot, the list was long today of questions I wanted to ask, but this does touch on something. I mean, you're Jewish, and it has come up from time to time in legislating the city. But clearly anti-Semitism is on the rise. Yeah. You know, as you take this larger platform as a Jewish member of Congress, what are some of the things, I mean, are you thinking about things
all
you can
the time,
do
yeah.
yourself?
Yeah, I mean, yes. And as you know, Sherry, like my daughter, Maddie's 12. She's going through the bat mitzvah process. So like being Jewish is like a big deal right now. I mean, it always has been for me. I'm deeply religious and it's a big part of my life, my faith. But at the moment, my daughter is going through that really serious process of getting bat mitzvahed. And it's exciting, but it's, you know, at the top of the conversation, right? And so, yeah, I want to be a leader on this, in part because, you know, the rise in anti-Semitism is serious, it's scary, it's bad for the country, it's not who we are, so, you know, get rid of it. It's also tied to, in this country and in others, throughout history, it's tied to the kind of rise of the rise of authoritarianism and fascism that is bad for everyone. And so the two are linked, and they always have been. You're seeing that here. You know, that's what happened in Charlottesville. You know why Biden ran. Was to, you know, fix what was clearly broken, be part of fixing what was clearly broken, that it happened, that there were these chants, that there was this riot, that the president at the time said, hey, it's okay, there are good people on both sides. No, we don't do that. We cannot do that here. Because if you let it happen a little bit, and worse, you encourage it, you know, by voting to overturn an election or showing up and being part of what happened on January 6th, it emboldens folks to do more. And what voters did last night and last month was to say, don't do that. Please don't do that. We love this country. We want more democracy, not less. Don't do that. And so, but that's not the end. Like, it's gonna, you know, fortunately voters took care of it in this cycle. Yeah, God bless them. But you know, what's happening in Columbus and what's happening within McCarthy's caucus is still very scary. And my hope is that in Columbus, and I'm gonna work on it, it's not just, I'm hoping, but what's happening in Columbus and in D.C., the pro-democracy folks are going to prevail. And they're going to say, look, don't do this. Do not mess with the Constitution. You know, do not try to redraw maps, you know, in this horrific anti-democratic way so that we get in a couple extra seats. Don't do that. Voters are the powerful folks. They're the ones that are supposed to decide these things. Don't make it harder for voters to pass a constitutional amendment. Let their will, you know, determine how we act. And the same with what, you know, McCarthy and Scalise are going to have to address within their caucus, which is, we are not going to abdicate our responsibility to lead here. Sure, have an investigation, but if all we do is investigate, we will have broken our promise to the American people that we were going to take care of inflation, that we were going to work on public safety and gun violence. So, you know, there are a lot of open questions, and I'm going to be a very loud, very passionate advocate for our democracy and for the kind of work that voters expect to happen in Congress and in the State House, so that their lives get better, because they come first and they haven't been first for a long time.
Okay, I could obviously talk to you forever about this. And I think, you know, we'll certainly be covering your transition more in stories on Cincinnati.com.
Yeah.
Like, there's like all these announcements you're talking about and everything. This is in our last conversation.
Sorry. Because I want to be like, yeah, let's keep, but we should keep talking. Like, I know I it's not my podcast, but like, you know, town hall, we're going to do so many town halls. We're going to do so many interviews, like the exact opposite of what's happened before, where you didn't see your member of Congress. This should be the norm. These open conversations where we talk about everything and everything gets put on the table and I'm accountable to you all. Sorry.
I mean, I do live in the district, and I have to say, when I first was in the district, I mean, town halls were a thing.
Yeah,
and they became not a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I love them.
We have a couple. So we should ask some fun questions. Should we ask some fun questions?
We want to let you go. We know you're busy. Before we get to a couple fun questions.
Yeah.
District 1. You know, I voted in your race for the first time since I moved back to Cincinnati. There's a high likelihood I might not be voting in your race when it comes up again because of the continuing saga of what is redistricting in our state. I know that's probably way too down the road for you to think about.
No, these are 2-year terms. Not really.
Not really. Yeah, you're probably already have your reelection campaign selected, your committee selected. But is that a concern for you right now? And how do you think that's going to shake out?
Yeah, it's a concern for me. It should be a concern for everyone, and that's one of the things that I hope and I know you all will cover. Is it's not just redistricting, it's about democracy. What are the tenets of our democracy, and what's at the core of our democracy? Should voters pick their elected officials, or should elected officials pick their voters? And the answer is no. Voters should pick. Well, then folks in Columbus should be either leaving the maps alone or listening to the court and saying, hey, it's still unconstitutional. Fix it so that that voters are in charge. My hope is that the pro-democracy folks, prevail.
So you'd be good if this district stayed the same as it is now. You did win, I suppose.
Yeah, it's you know, what's good about this district now is that it's competitive. It's still not, the challenge is that in the big picture, it's not constitutional because, you know, it unduly favors Republicans by, you know, polling voters going to another county to get Republican voters. Whereas you don't need to leave Hamilton County, Columbus, Cleveland, they all have, everyone's in their county, in Franklin County in Columbus and Cuyahoga County in Cleveland. This district should be entirely within Hamilton County. That's constitutional.
That said, though, I think people who were trying to predict the race, most would say, as long as you didn't get shellacked in Warren County, that you had a path to victory. And so you didn't get shellacked. You actually
overperformed
in Warren County. What do you think that says about Southwest Ohio as a whole?
I think it says that we're very representative of where the country is, and I think Georgia just did the same last night, which is to say, like, hey, you know, this district's pretty fantastic. I mean, it's this, you got the city, you got the suburbs, and then you have rural parts in Warren County, and collectively this is a district that says, hey, look, we want to be done with the chaos, we want to be done with the extremism. Don't embrace the big lie. Go and work on strengthening, not undermining, our democracy. Go protect our rights and restore the freedom afforded by Roe. We want to be in charge of our healthcare decisions, not, you know, politicians. And get to work on this economy and keep us safe and build an economy that works for us being, you know, working folks. And get serious about public safety and gun violence, right? Like, you know, invest in police and fire, and get these guns out of here. So I think it's very representative. And so I hope, again, that the pro-democracy folks in Columbus say, no, no, either don't mess with them or make them better. But, you know, we've got to do what's best for the Constitution of the state and what's right for voters. So that's what I'm hopeful that you know, we'll be active in that process, because it's not about me as much as it is about our democracy and whether or not voters are the ones in power or, you know, these politicians in Columbus. And I hope the politicians in Columbus empower voters. That's what this country's all about.
All right. So my first lighter question is, if I'm remembering this correctly, you did get a call from President Biden on election night.
Yeah.
Was there another phone call or somebody who reached out to you that was oh my gosh, this person's calling me?
Oh, geez. Yeah, I mean, I had a ton of those. It was like, you know, old friends from high school. Right, like people I hadn't talked to forever, and they popped up, and you're like, oh, I love that person, and they were watching this. How cool, right? And same with folks from college, you know, because I had worked for Pelosi. Her chief of staff at the time was a woman named Judy Lemons, and she was this like larger than life figure for me. I was 21 years old. I was doing pretty basic work on the Hill. And, you know, she was running at that time the whips race. You know, Pelosi was running for whip. She reached out and sent an email to the info@landsmanforcongress.com. And the subject line said, I hope you remember me. I hope you remember me. I immediately called her and I said, Judy, I hope you, of course. Yeah, you're like an icon, a hero. I hope you remembered me. I didn't know you, you know. You know, of course, she said, yes. You know, so that's 20 years later. It's neat to hear from folks throughout your life. And yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of calls from people who I just love and adore, and I know who love and adore me, but also who folks who've been part of my life but I haven't heard from. So that was the coolest part, or a cool part.
When
nobody, did Taylor Swift call me? No. No. I didn't get a call from Taylor. That would have been
George Clooney didn't call you.
George Clooney didn't call. Mm. But, you know, these really important people throughout my life, from high school to college to these jobs, they all did, and that was cool. That was pretty special.
The Landsmans are Taylor Swift fans, am I correct?
Oh yeah.
And that would be a big call in your household. Yeah.
Yeah, we're big Swifties, and yeah, that would have been a big deal, but no call from Taylor.
Did you drive by where you used to live in Washington, D.C.?
No, not yet, because I was all over. But I did go to I think the first or second day I was up there, I went to where Strickland's office was, because I worked for Ted Strickland on the Hill. He was a member of Congress before he was governor, and a huge, huge, mentor. And, you know, he's a big deal in my life still. And a guide, right? I mean, he's just one of the better people ever. To do public service, and so trying to do that well and as well as he did is just always going to be what I strive for. And so he's there constantly, thank goodness. And so I went to see that office, and that was pretty powerful. He's not there anymore, obviously, but you know, just to walk around, and people are very kind and say, you know, of course you can walk around and see. And I went to Pelosi's old office, because that was, you know, where I spent a lot of my time in 1998, 1999, when I was first getting started in politics. So it was neat to be back.
Did you get assigned an office?
I got assigned an office.
Does it have windows?
Yeah, it's got a window. It's got windows. It's in the Longworth building, named after a member of Congress from Cincinnati. So that's pretty cool. And I'll dig a little more into that history, but I think that's a neat history. And so I'm on the fourth floor in Longworth, and we will, on swearing in, on January 3rd, we'll have, you know, the doors open. And I don't know if we'll be able to do skyline and graders, but we'll have stuff from the district to make sure, you know, people get a little bit of a Cincinnati, Southwest Ohio experience from Lebanon to, you know, Bond Hill. I want to make sure that people get a sense of the flavor of Cincinnati. And
so I have a tip. I have a tip for you in that regard. Yeah. You probably already know, but Harris Teeter, which is owned by Kroger, carries graders. So you don't even have to have it shipped.
I think the ice cream we can do. I'm worried about just have this. You know, if you watch The Office, this, you know, one of the iconic scenes is when Kevin tries to bring in chili, you know, he's coming in with this huge vat of chili, right? And it spills all over, and he's trying to clean it up. It's one of the
We're gonna stick that meme into the story that that promotes the podcast.
I want to do skyline, but we're all terrified of having. How do we get the skyline into the building without pulling a Kevin and spilling skyline all over? So we're going to do everything we can to have as many Cincinnati businesses represented.
All right, last question. Did you wear the puffy coat in your badge ID?
No.
Isn't that what you're going to be wearing when you go in and out of the building?
I love my puffy coat. I wear it. I have it on now. I have this, and I hope this is very relatable to everybody listening. I have a Bengals jacket that I've been wearing because I've obviously for all my life been a Bengals fan, but it's been a very complicated relationship because of how tough and sometimes toxic it's been, right? Emotional roller coaster, and we've all wanted to get off it at times. We're all back on it, right? Because of Joe Burrow and because of Joe Mixon and P. Ryan and Chase and all of these folks. I'm wearing this jacket almost everywhere now in Cincinnati, you know, Cincinnati and in D.C. And it's great. People are like, hey, who day? And it's exciting. I think I'm in a better place where I can just sort of embrace this team without getting hurt. But I think I'm like most of us, a little nervous that we're going to get hurt again, but it's okay, right? I think we can do it. We can sort of lean into being Bengals fans again. And I've also got an FC jacket, Cherry. Like Elijah and I, he's my 11-year-old. We are now season ticket holders in the Bailey, and that's like our community of fans. And it is so much fun. And they had a great season. And so that's going to be something I look forward to every week during the season, coming home and going to that Saturday night game in the Bailey.
The Bailey is bold. You got to stand. Do you know this?
You stand. There's no sitting in the Bailey.
There's no sitting.
You stand. But you know, I'm not going to sit. Elijah and I got into other seats one game, and he just kept longingly looking at the Bailey and just almost like sad. It was the game where we scored six. And we had already scored three, and there's my kid, and he's just looking at the Bailey, and he's in a great mood. And I'm like, hey, buddy, you want to go down there? And he's like, yeah, let's go back to Canoe because we have the tickets. So we just walked back to the Bailey, and just slowly but surely as he's walking down the steps, everyone's patting him on the back. Welcome back, Elijah. You know, and he's just like, let's go. And we scored three more goals. So we belong in the Bailey.
You know what, Greg? At the end of this podcast, which you obviously know since you're an avid listener, we like to – hone in on a That's So Cincinnati moment. You just did it for us right there.
Yeah.
That gave me some Cincinnati chills down my spine.
I can't top. We really just talked a lot of Cincinnati things, and I can't top any of that this week.
All right, we have to let Greg go, but you know, congrats, congratulations.
I love the show. I love that you do it. I love that it's focused on Cincinnati. I feel like we're all homers, which is what makes Cincinnati so great. So whenever, anytime, you know, I'm yours.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thanks, guys.